It's time for To The Last Drop podcast with Liam Del Calm and Brendan Mell.
Welcome to today's show, guys. Another bumper edition because we are sort of halfway through the pool stages of the World Cup. In today's show, we're going to talk box selections for the game against Ireland. We talk about Andre Pollard's return to the squad. We obviously have to talk about Ireland, the team that the box will come up against this weekend. We'll talk a little bit about box hotels, the hotels that the box teams have stayed at in the past. And we will also talk about the pool stages of the World Cup, who's likely to go through, who's likely to fail. And we're also talking a little bit of wine, as we should, because at least one of us is in France, and by the end of the week, two of us will be in France. Welcome, Brendan.
Thanks, Liam. Yeah, I feel like when I said to you, we can talk about me coming through to find you in France, I almost feel like that scene out of The Wedding Crashers where the girl says, you know, the guy says, "I'll never leave you," and she says, "Well, I'll find you." So yeah, I'm on your trail. I'll find you somewhere in Paris later this week.
Paris is a big city; it's a metropolis. Good luck with that.
Well, I'll find something. I'll definitely find some wine somewhere along the line, and I'm sure we'll stumble into each other at some point.
Yeah. Yeah. So a massive week. This is a week that we've been anticipating for a very long time. South Africa up against Ireland this weekend. And already, I know it's early in the week, but shots fired.
Yeah. I must admit, I looked at that. I just started laughing when I saw the 7-1 bench. And because I know Rossi was asked about it earlier in the week. And he said, well, it could happen again, but yeah, Rossi tends to give those sort of answers to sort of, you know, dangle a bit of bait amongst, you know, especially the overseas journalists. So I thought it, initially it was just that. But when I saw it, I started laughing because I just thought, you know what, this is a real, and I don't want to use an expletive, but this is a real FU to sort of Ireland. You're the best team in the world. You're number one. You know, this is who we are. We're not scared to put 7 forwards on the bench, and yeah, come stop us.
Yeah, it was a case of when the team came out, there was part of me that actually wasn't surprised because they've been doing things that aren't where they've parted with convention. A number of things they've done even before World Cup, and obviously now in the World Cup, they do things a little bit differently. They've already had the 7-1 split against the All Blacks. They explained then they were forced into that because of a late injury. And now that the 7-1 has arrived, I must say I didn't fall off my chair. I think it's also another way of you know, if you look at the Ireland South Africa matchup over the last number of years, what is apparent is that the Springboks can't beat Ireland in the ways that they used to in the past, where they just come with sheer brutality up front and sort of kick the door down. Ireland, obviously, a much wiser squad now. They've also got players in terms of size, in terms of technique, that more than match the Springboks. So you can't use that that old method of beating or breaking them down. But I think what the Box have done here is the statement here is, well, if our forwards couldn't do that in the last few years, what we'll do now is we'll just bring more forwards. So we will go back to that old tried-tested method and just do it with, you know, with a bit more force.
Well, yeah, I think, and I was looking at it, and the first thing sort of struck me when I sort of, obviously, initial reaction was, geez, 15 forwards and 8 backs in the 23, that's quite a heavily forward-based selection. But, yeah, I was looking at it, and I thought to myself, well, yeah, if you look at that bench, when you've got a Dion Fourie and a Marco van Staden on that bench and a Quagga Smith, yeah, you've got three guys who play to the ball and three very good jacklers. And Ireland's whole sort of game plan works around quick ruck ball. I mean, the Six Nations, all we heard, the whole Six Nations was how they were 2.3, 2.5 seconds for ruck recycle. And I think this is the Box kept them close a year ago in Dublin. And felt they got quite a bit out of that game, even though they lost it. I think what they're going to do in that second half is target that and see if they can't disrupt them quite heavily there, and obviously steal ball. And if stop their quick recycle, it's going to disrupt Ireland quite heavily. But yeah, it's easier said than done.
In fact, when When Jacques was asked a question about the number of fetches at their disposal in this game, he actually said that's not something he specifically looked at, which is just rather bizarre. Of course they've looked at it. I mean, it's there's no way they could have overlooked something like that. To return to that point you made about the game in Dublin last year, I was at that game and I know how gutted they were afterwards because the Springboks felt they should have won that game. There were one or two silly mistakes, and then, of course, their goal kicking was a little bit of target in that game. So they felt even then that they had the measure of Ireland. It's now just a question of putting all those things back together again. So I think there'll be a lot of confidence in the box team before this game.
Yeah, and I think that was the one thing. I remember that game as well in terms of I thought that, before then, I know I had a conversation with one or two people in the box squad, and they were a bit uneasy about the French and the Irish challenges, just because, I mean, everybody had gone on about them and how good they were and how they were these world beaters, etc. And the box hadn't played them, so they were a bit apprehensive. And even though they lost, when I spoke to them afterwards, they felt they saw enough out of their game plan that if they do meet again at the World Cup, they feel they can overturn that result as such. Well, I mean, now it's the moment of truth. I mean, it's not the end of the world for whoever loses this game, but there certainly is a huge amount of bragging rights a lot of talking points. I think the one thing that the 7-1 does it literally lays down that forward challenge in no uncertainty. I mean, there's you can't even be nuanced about it. It's just it's brutal. It's just this is what we're going to do: try and stop it. Ireland obviously going to try and take the ball a bit wider and hope that with the lack of obviously forward reserves that they tie them out a wider bit, backline reserves, should I say. But yeah, it's going to be fascinating, this chess game that we're going to watch on set.
Yeah, going into it with just one back on the bench. I mean, Jacques Nienaber did make the point that, he knows that there is risk attached to this. He also made the point there's a risk attached to a 6-2. But he said he stressed the point that it's a calculated risk and one that they comfortable with.
Yeah, I mean, you look at their backline, and that's the one thing. I mean, I was thinking, okay, where are the big sort of like holes they can fall into, and the only real one I can see is probably at 13. I know they say Damon Delenda can cover there at 13. Damon Willemser can move into 12. Cheslin and Curti have both played fullback. Cheslin's played fly-off. Foff has played fly-off. Yeah, they're covered in all these sort of different ways in terms of versatility. But 13 is a bit more specialized, and Damon Delenda hasn't played 13 for a while. But saying that, I mean, you sort of wonder to yourself, I saw somebody mention it on Twitter after the announcement, and it sort of sparked a thought about when the box have had injuries during games. I think outside backs has probably been the one space they haven't had huge injuries. It's normally a forward. It's normally one of their big forwards that sort of goes down. And I think that might be part of the calculation as well, because I think mostly the outside backs don't get involved as much as obviously the forwards, and they feel they can take that risk. And still, it's a hell of a risk to take. You get away with it, and if it works for you again, like it did against the All Blacks, I wonder if we're going to see other teams try it as well.
Yeah, I think there's no doubt that a lot of science would have gone into this decision. You just don't arrive at a 7-1 bench split overnight. I think also the seed wasn't planted in the New Zealand game. I think it probably came from well before, and they've built up to this moment. And then also, we probably need to just chat about no Dwayne Vermeulen in this lineup. And then there's no Willy Leroux. So two very experienced players. It's almost as if there's a bit of a changing of the guard.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think Dwayne surprised me. Willy not so much, because I think Damon Willemser has been growing into that role. He is almost sort of a form 15 at the moment. And while Willy's still a hell of an experienced guy, I could see that change coming naturally. Dwayne's one sort of surprised me, but I suppose I sort of wondered how much that's going to do with Marco van Staden being on the bench and him being, as the backup, the third hooker now, and that sort of situation. if they wanted him on the field in the second half because of that.
Mm. Yeah, I thought about that as well, and I thought of Dwayne at Ulster. You know, how do they feel he measured up there? I know he didn't play there for very long, but still, there was a stint there. To not have that experience in a game like this is massive. In fact, Jacques spoke about experience and how, and if we talk about Ireland now, how equally they are matched in terms of age, in terms of number of caps. Obviously, the two squads and the two sets of coaches, they know each other very well. But the point was made, although they are very well matched, is that the game will be determined by how well they prepare this week and not, what necessarily they know of each other.
I suppose in that way, we should talk about the Marco van Staden situation anyway, and the Andre that brings us to the Andre Pollard situation. Mm. And there's obviously quite a bit there that we need to talk about there, because that in itself, and I know while a lot of Springbok fans were overjoyed by the fact that Andre Pollard is in, and we've had this sort of almost, I don't know, soap opera type sort of situation around his inclusion, exclusion, all these type of things. I found it bizarre in a way because, I think maybe then we should probably just play that clip from the question you asked when the guys left at OR Tambo for people to understand from where we're coming from. And maybe put that clip in here. You asked the question to Jacques Nienaber just before they left about what they're going to do if they get an injury in terms of a forward. Are they going to replace a back with a forward? And this was his answer.
You're with Liam Delcom and Brendan Nell on the To The Last Drop podcast.
I think if you think about the only guys that we didn't take, who's available for the back? If you think about it, it's Herschel, it's Andre, and Lucanio. If you think now, out of the 42, best three backs that we can select, out of the guys that has worked with us, yes, we can go further than that, but then it will be a guy that hasn't been part of us for a while. So obviously, if there's a forward getting injured now, and we feel we're covered in that position, let's say we lose a prop now, we won't bring it back in. It'll be suicidal. We only have 5 props. If we lose a hooker now, we won't bring it back in. We only have 3 hookers. It will be suicidal. But when we lose a loose forward or we lose a lock, we might, because we've got, I think we've got 5 locks. If you think about JK, Archie, we've got Marvin Ori, then we have Yibin, and we've got Sous, and then you have Peter Steff has played for us lock before. Yes, you can flow. We threw Dwayne in at 4 lock against France, I think, when we got all the cards. So there's options there. So if we lose a lock, we feel that there's a lot of versatility within the loose forward lock division that we might bring in, we can bring in a back. Yeah.
Probably a stupid question now. Of all the injuries, how are you going to split the squad?
I'll be honest, it would probably have been 18. Are we now 1914? Probably 1850 if we didn't get injuries.
Yeah, so in that answer, it's when you ask a question like that, obviously, whatever answer comes back, you're gonna remember, especially when that eventuality unfolds. You know, we did have a tight forward or front rank in this case that had to go home. And then they arrive at a different decision. And of course, I mean, I completely concede that in a World Cup, in a game that is dynamic, it's fluid, things change, and you are allowed to change your mind. That's fine. But then say so, because they arrived at a different decision. I know they're going to talk about like-for-like hookers, and the option, that option wasn't available to them necessarily. The option was available maybe in the squad, and that's the way it was explained. But yeah, it just sat a little bit uncomfortably with me.
Same here, because one of the things that I sort of picked up straight away is we've had 6 years now out of Jacques and Russie, team selections and them thinking out the box and them doing things, but they've always been pretty much open cards with guys like us. I mean, when we've been at press conferences, is often they, and they've been open to talk to us on afterwards about decisions as well, and explain them if we don't understand them. And I'm conceding, I'm sitting here in South Africa at the end, but the fact that you have been uncomfortable in Paris, you know, says to me that maybe the communication wasn't so good, because what they often do is, I mean, they think these things through a thousand different angles.
Yeah.
And yeah. So you've got to concede that. So maybe our speculation here is not the same speculation with the squad, but just from an outside point of view, and you can, and if fans have to understand this, well, it's great to have Andre Pollard there. Yeah, replacing Malcolm Marx with him, first of all, not like for like. Your first question that comes into my head is a guy like Joseph Dweba, who's the official hooker reserve for the team. Yeah, what message does that send out to a guy who's like that? The second thing of all, of course, is, of course, they've been playing up Marnie's goal kicking is not an issue. Jock has said it several times. And he has gone as far as defending Marnie in a press conference. And now you bring Andre Pollard in. What message does that send to Marnie Lebok?
I think that is the nub of it. I think they are more concerned about goal kicking than they care to admit. And this decision, I think a lot of it has to do with that. I understand also that they don't want to sit on in a public space, a public forum, and criticize their goalkeepers, because you need to build confidence and not break it down. So I understand that bit as well. But, you know, there's a time and a place to talk about these things, and certainly not, you know, publicly that hasn't materialized.
And I know, I mean, you and I offline have spoken about Joseph Dweba, and maybe he hasn't made his World Cup selection case as strong as it could have been. Yeah, he has had some decent provincial outings, but his line out throwing is a concern, and maybe that has sort of got them to the point where they took Dion Fourie as the backup hooker. But the Marco van Staden thing sort of threw me this week, because while I can understand there's always a backup plan because of the World Cup rules with uncontested scrums, that in the past it was a guy like Trevor Nyakani who was the swinger. If he needed to, he would pack down a hooker, that sort of thing. To now have Marco van Staden as this almost suddenly third choice hooker that could play in a World Cup semi-final and final potentially as a hooker is a very strange one indeed. And when the margins are so small in World Cup games and these huge knockout games, you've got to say that is a risk. They might know more than we know, and it might work out for them. But like all their risks, there is a potential for backfire.
Yes, they are certainly prepared to take risks, and that has been the fascinating bit about following this team this over the last while. They're quite happy to take, as Jacques explained, in the case of the 7-1 split, it's a calculated risk. But as you rightly point out, it does put you in more peril than you probably should be if one of those things go wrong. But of course, it also has the promise of, something spectacular, working out in your favor. And Jock actually spoke about that leading up to the Ireland game, not sort of the nervous energy, but the excitement about building up for a game like this, where you've put things in place, you've built up to this particular moment, the plans are falling into place, and to see then in a game like this whether it works. So it's almost like the mad scientist, a bit of this, bit of that, haven't tried this, put that in, and let's just see what happens. The rugby world has been so similar for so long, everybody does the same thing, and along come the Springboks, and they just test convention, and they sort of take the rule book and, throw it out the window.
Well, my only thing about this, and I've got nothing wrong. I don't have any problem with innovation. And if I feel, a lot of the times while we watch the team closely and we point these things out, these are two coaches who've won a World Cup. They know what they're doing. So I always sort of default to their judgment in terms of that. It doesn't mean you can't question it, but it doesn't mean you have to take that into account. And I think the only worry I would have, and if it is addressed by them and it's not a factor in the team, then it's not a factor. But the thing would be with these changes, you can easily upset squad morale. Marnie the book where a lot of his teammates have backed him. Now suddenly you bring Andre in, you might get one or two players a bit unhappy about that. And it's we've all seen teams which can quickly that dynamic change in terms of squad happiness. If that doesn't, if they've all bought in and if they all are on the same page, and I don't just mean on a World Cup page, because in World Cups, as we saw in 2003 with Cornet cricket, players tend to do things and sort of let things happen that shouldn't happen just because they want to be at the World Cup. And obviously talking about Comstolder out there. But, yeah, I don't think this is on the same level. But if everybody's on the same page, then, yes, it'll work. But that is the danger, I think, more than the selection danger, is that you can upset that squad dynamic a bit.
Yeah, I think to conclude this part of our chat, they could have had Fabien Galthié, the French national coach, sort of make the point for them, because he was asked about a changed squad for him ahead of their next game, and he made the point that we adapt and we go according to certain deadlines. He says it's like Darwin's theory. The most intelligent species adapts.
No, that's true. And that's one thing that the Box have done pretty well. So, look, it's going to be fascinating. There's so many talking points. We can easily go in for an hour on this Ireland game alone. And we're going to have a lot to talk about after the Ireland game as well. But, let's just turn. Liam, you're going to talk to us about some... Yeah, a lot of people, we spoke last week about some of the logistics of traveling in the World Cup and some of the challenges that people don't have. And this is not a complaining, it's reality. Everyone sort of wonders where the Box stay. They tend to stay in these lavish 5-star hotels. When I say lavish, I mean, I don't think there are hotels in South Africa that sort of come to the same sort of grandeur as that, and then definitely not hotels that journalists stay in, at least. So tell us a bit about what's been happening there.
Certainly not. They've opted to stay well outside the confines of Paris. So you basically have to go to one of the northern stations in the city, Gare du Nord, and then take an overland train to this little hamlet it's about 40 minutes north outside Paris. They're on a golf estate and spa, and we'll be staying there for this week, in the build-up to this game against Ireland. And they've always had this, not just this Springbok management group, but also previously, the Springbok team has often found a hotel way off the beaten track where it's very difficult, certainly by public transport, to get to them. And it just sort of reminded me again of a 2002 trip when Rolf Stroyli was the coach on an end-of-year tour where they were on a golf estate. It was actually a championship course, 42 Ks outside Marseille, and it was 4 Ks to the nearest town one way and I think 5 Ks if you go the other way to the next town. So you're kind of like stuck there if you don't have your own vehicle. That didn't work out well for them. I remember Alistair Coetzee's team in 2016 decided also to stay on a golf estate, well out of bounds of what you would call Christchurch city limits. And it was a complete trek to get to them. And 2019 as well, the Box for their game in Shizuoka against Italy, I think it was. Yeah, it was quite a big week. They stayed in a place called Omazaki, which is 57 kilometers away. And it's this little town one of the sleepiest places I've ever been to. You didn't hear anything. There was just no noise. There were no children screaming or... there is traffic, but it was just eerie. It was something out of a...
I'm sure you mean children laughing, not children screaming, because... That could be something very different.
Well, okay. Both.
And it's just, it often is presents a challenge. But yeah, it's just part of the job that you kind of sort of make peace with and get on with.
Well, I remember in 2015 at the World Cup, we were booked into a hotel in Kensington in London, and we had it. the boxer also somewhere Guildford.
The Royal Garden by any chance?
No. There's another very posh hotel. I don't know how I ended up there, but they were staying in Guildford. Now, anybody knows in the UK who knows that distance knows that it's about a 40-45 minute train ride to Richmond. And then from Richmond, you have to change trains, and it's another 45-minute drive. Yeah, and then once you get to Guildford, it's about a 15-minute walk from the train station. So when you do this every day for like a month, and you're doing two odd hours at least a day traveling time, then back, it sort of starts to break your soul eventually. But they're on the golf course and they're playing golf and they're very happy. And sometimes we used to get very frustrated to get there. After this, almost 2 hour journey there, and we get in the box and say, okay, you've got 3 minutes with this player, and then we finished. And then you sort of like, okay, after 3 minutes, pack up and head back again. That's all. So it's not all fun and games on these tours as well.
Yeah, I recall that hotel they stayed in Omazaki. We kind of joke because it reminded some of us of that Catskill resort in the 1987 movie Dirty Dancing. Don't even remember that, Brendan. Something between that and the Overlook Hotel in The Shining, because it sort of sat alone in these hills where it looked like anything could happen. And then there was actually a little bit. There was a tremor that week as well, and there was a decommissioned nuclear power plant about 10 kilometers away. So it was fun and games.
No, well, look, I mean. I remember Gavin Rich having a laugh at me in 2011 because the World Cup there was just after the earthquake in Christchurch. And I was so prepared. I had an app on my phone that told me when there was earthquakes. And anybody who sort of follows earthquakes knows that there's probably about 3,000 earthquakes a day.
Yeah.
But none, they're obviously quite small ones. But my phone kept on beeping and Gavin kept on sort of saying, it's another earthquake, it's another earthquake. So, these are all fun and games on these tours as well. Liam showing me a bottle of wine and I wish I could show it to you. It's a woman with great flowing hair, which is rather apt for the island beak. It's called Rendezvous, I think, if I can see right.
Yeah, it's not Voulez-vous. It's Rendezvous. I walked into a little wine shop in Paris, it's a very small wine shop, but they seem to have a vast selection. It's also in price. It just varies from like a bottle you can buy for 10 euros to a bottle you can, I didn't ask him for the top of the range, but certainly within sight there was bottles of 65 euros and 70 and so on and so on. And I settled for this bottle of Rendezvous. It's a Cabernet Franc, Cabernet Sauvignon, and it is from the Languedoc. And I had it last night, or half of it at least. And I had it with a cassoulet, and I can tell you, it was splendid.
Did it get you to your destination, your rendezvous?
I ate it in my apartment, Brendan, so it certainly got me where I needed to be.
Glamorous life of a touring journalist. Yeah, I must admit, I last night had some Swartland Syrah, very nice box wine. You can get nowadays in a 2 liter box, and we obviously definitely not averse to having the old box wine. We quite enjoy it, and that was pretty decent last night. So if you have a look out for that, that's pretty good as well. Yeah, and I think that. I'm sort of going to go off because I've got to go pack. I'm going to be catching a flight a bit later now, off to Paris, and where I'll go hunt down Liam and go find him wherever he is in his apartment drinking his rendezvous. With our next pod, we will be recording together from Paris. So that's something to look forward to. Liam, it's going to be a big game. It's Ireland on Saturday. I can't wait. And let's hope by the time I get there, the festivities have begun.
Yeah, look, it's going to be a tense week. The Jacques never made the point that he's not nervous. It's more excitement. So there is a bit of excitement, but there's also that little tinge the back there where you think, this better not go south. But a lot of anticipation.
Yeah, it's going to be good. It's going to be good. But that's it for us this week. We'll chat to you next week where we have all the reaction from the game. And we'll be telling you how many red wines we found in France as well.
Thanks for listening. And a reminder, you can find all the To The Last Drop podcasts on the Brendan Nell YouTube channel, iono.fm, Spotify, player.fm, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, and iTunes, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts.